racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Yeah, and we're back again for another week this week. And once again, there's a lot of things happening in motorsport here in Australia and overseas, and we'll have to bring you the news on most of the things that are happening around the place. A little bit quieter in some ways this week, not so many of the outside interviews due to technical difficulties, as we'll describe them. But other than that, we'll have a lot of news. And Craig, you're the man with the sore voice after going out and doing some race calling.
I'm in very ordinary nick after enjoying a great night at the Jack Daniels round two of the long track solo masters competition. It was a very interesting night. Jason Crump showed his true style once again in winning three out of the four heats. A young man, though, by the name of Oliver Allen, an Englishman who's 17 years old, showed some great style too. Unfortunately, there was a bit of a mix-up in points, and his second choice in his second lane choice or gate choice was affected a little bit by that, and unfortunately, where long track racing is really so important to get to the corner first, and particularly when you're starting, you start out of turn two, race into turn three before you complete three laps. It was unfortunate that the position he got moved into didn't put him in the best position for the start, and in the end ended up with a puncture which put him out of the event. But on Martin's morning version of Inside Motorsport this week, we're dedicating the time to the final of the long track championships. A great number of international riders. I think in the final there were seven international riders and three or four Australians. I can't remember off the top of my head now, but Jason Crump, an absolutely amazing rider who shared last year's world championship success in 1999, where he enjoyed success becoming the world teams, or one of the world teams champions for Australia, and of course remembering that Australia started Speedway a long time ago now, back in the 20s, if not earlier. It was great to see Jason Crump, one, getting the success, and then two, being able to go around to the tracks like Tamworth up to Brisbane last weekend, and then concluding the long track Grand Prix series at Shepparton last night. A lot of racing happening last night, and in fact a lot of racing happening as we speak down there in Tasmania at the Premier Speedway in New Norfolk. The Australian Super Sedan titles are underway at the moment, and that one is very interesting to see how positions are going to come out. Of course, Ron and John Pine from Newcastle both in Tasmania to enjoy some more racing on the Apple Isle, and they would be looking forward to getting once again up to the front, and that's one story that we're going to look towards over the next week. I am going to try and cut down my talking here tonight, but just by way of letting you know what else is on the show, John Hughes is coming up on the show to talk about the finale of the World Sprint Car, the Sprint Car World Series, World Series Sprint Cars, I'll get it right in the end, and of course Brooke Tatnall, having we spoke to him last week, and he had already won the title, but there was still the grand final to go, and a great grand final it was too, by all accounts. And then we also have to look at a little event happening over in Monte Carlo too, Colin.
Yes, the Monte Carlo Rally, the kickoff of the World Rally Championship for the year 2000. As always, a great start to the Rally Championship, and a rally with a lot of tradition, a lot of interest, particularly with the new driver and car lineups. I'd seen some of the provisional early stage results on Saturday, and it was interesting to see the fact that where once upon a time we could have counted on Toyota being very much up the field, now in the hands of privateer teams like Griffone and the like, they were in the top 10 but languishing towards the bottom end. But we had cars like Sayat, the Peugeot 206 Rally, World Rally Car and the like, doing much, much better. Interesting to see as well that Carlos Sainz, new Ford signing in the Ford Focus, the 2000 Evolution car, ahead of his teammate. So I think there might be a bit of fun and games there as that season goes on, because as usual I'm sure there'll be a bit of sparks flying if certain drivers believe that maybe the other driver is getting a better deal than they are.
And just to let you know, Tommy Mäkinen did eventually go on to win that, so he's picking up the season where he left off for Mitsubishi last year.
Well, that's right. Mitsubishi, Tommy Mackin's been saying that Mitsubishi should get into the business of producing a world rally car rather than a Group A rally car, but then Mitsubishi's version has been that the Evolution, I don't know if it's an Evolution 7, because it was an Evolution 6 last year, if the current car qualifies to be an Evo 7, but their view has been that by the car continues going through refinement, evolving, what they have achieved is the reliability that some of the other teams may have missed out on, where the cars might be quick at certain times, but they've also been fragile, and that's what they've been playing with.
Whilst we're talking rallying, and we should have a look at the Paris to Dakar, because a lot more controversy and unfortunately also a death during the week at the Paris to Dakar. But in results after stage 14, three Mitsubishis and a Nissan crashed when they hit a sand dune at speed and rolled over. Dominic Searle is co-driver for the 1997 rally winning Kenjiro Shinzuzaki, or Shinzuzaka, sorry, in one of the Mitsubishis was among those who were injured. The Japanese led the race from the second stage in Singal to Monday the 11th stage at the first after 5 days interrupted in Niger owing to those terrorist threats that we talked about last week. He was one of the race favourites, although he lost considerable ground on Tuesday when he was overtaken by last year's winner, Jean-Louis Schlesser, in his prototype buggy, and then fell some 15 minutes behind the Spaniard Miguel Prieto, driving another of the Mitsubishis, and the Belgian Gregory de Mevis in a Nissan, who were also involved in the crash. The organisers said that those involved driving about 1 kilometre off the recommended route on the race roadbook with the Salsa car in the front. The rally was continued on Thursday with 14 stages from Korof to Dakhal, including the 789-kilometre time section, the longest of the race. Now, these times in front now after 14 stages is Felsier and Menge. Of course, they're in the Renault. Then you have Peter Hansel and Cotret in the SPM. Third is Fontaine and Picard in a Mitsubishi. Then another of the Renaults with Servi and Le Quin. Fifth place now is Kleimitschmidt and Thornton, or Thorner, and that rounds out the top five. I was interested to see here, though, that Freddie Loix was also making a move in the Paris to Dakar as well, because I was quite surprised to see Loix's name appearing on the Paris to Dakar timesheets.
Yeah, because he's also running in the Monte Carlo Rally. But looking at the final results, overall results of the Monte Carlo Rally at the finish of the last stage, it was Tommy Mackin in the Mitsubishi Lancer who won from Carlos Sainz in the Ford Focus. In third place was that grand old man of rallying, Juha Kankkunen, in the Subaru from Gardmeister in the Sayat, and that's actually very interesting to see how well that Sayat has gone. Didi Auriol, who is of course the more experienced of the two, but Gardmeister came in fourth. Bruno Thierry finishing fifth in one of the Griffon Toyota Corolla WRCs. Freddie Loix finishing sixth in Mitsubishi Lancer. Harman Schwartz, Skoda in seventh. Buddy in the Toyota in eighth. Stoll in Mitsubishi ninth. And Clements in a Skoda in tenth. So it's actually interesting to see Skoda in seventh and tenth.
With the new WRC car, they ran in Formula 2 all of last year, and with the plans to run the WRC cars this year, and obviously they've put together quite a good package, and whilst we laugh because we all remember the Skodas, the Skylarks and all those sorts of things that they got out with here, they are quite a decent looking car. I got to see some footage of them at the Acropolis Rally, and it was quite impressive as a Formula 2 package, and with like Hyundai going one step at a time up through the ranks, they're building very, very good looking cars, and of course our own Michael Guest looking to do some things with Hyundai.
Well, that's right. Australian rally driver Michael Guest is to drive a Winfield backed Hyundai Coupe Evolution 2 kit car in the 2000 World Rally Championship. He's going to be driving the Evo 2 kit car in his first three outings with the team, Portugal, Catalonia and Greece, and following that he'll then move up to an Accent World Rally Car for China, San Remo and Australia, and Hyundai, if the funding and situation allows it, was hoping to also put him in the Rally of Great Britain. Naturally enough, I guess this is a great challenge and an opportunity for him to get in there and get some experience. Where he's been running group and machinery in the past, the Formula 2 car gets him the option to sort of get used to some of the things that he hasn't had in the previous car. There's better braking, sequential gearboxes and so on, before he then moves on to the Accent. And it's good to see that Hyundai picked him up. I wonder if it's any indication of Wayne Bell's influence there within the team.
And interesting to see that Hyundai have put the Accent back onto the agenda, because late last year Hyundai had announced that they weren't going through with a WRC program, and that was quite interesting to see now that they are talking about a mid-season entry into the WRC.
Well, that's right. I think it was one of those things that they looked at the performance of the car in early testing, found a few problems and thought, hang on, let's back off a bit here, do a bit more testing. But as is, the car is actually coming on quite well. They'd had some early mechanical problems when they were testing in Sweden with Alistair McRae at the wheel, but once they had overcome the problems during testing the car, apparently the balance was good. The gear change, which is a critical thing in these rally cars these days, was getting better all the time. And the thing is too, that what a lot of people don't realise these days is it's not so much a mechanical thing with the gear change, it's electronic fine tuning, where that what you do is you actually have sensors that operate the gear change and operate how it comes in, and how the engine behaves while that gear change is going on. And so these days it's just as much an electronic change as a mechanical change, and it's quite the case with these cars. It's your electronic gurus with the laptop computer who are the ones who make the car go better, if at all.
Yeah, and that's like talking about those gearboxes in Australia, as in America now, the pro stock drag racing have banned any sort of gearbox and mechanised pneumatic controlled change or any sort of change like that in the gearbox, because nowadays it's too hard to determine whether you're actually running just a pneumatic gear changer to save you actually having to pull on the levers, or actually are hooking that up to a computer so the computer makes the changes for you at the correct time.
Yeah, automatic gear changes on by the black boxes. Of course, it's like the discussions that were going on a while back, the moving on to Formula One, about potentially bringing back traction control. And apparently the Formula One team owners, as part of their Concorde discussions with Max Mosley, had been suggesting the fact that because the difficulties in proving or disproving if people were running traction control, it was better off to say, yep, open slather again, guys, go for it. But Max Mosley came back out and said that the FIA said that they believe that the legalising of traction control send the wrong message about where F1 is going or where we want it to go. Traction control is a blatant elimination of driving skill. Anyone can obtain maximum acceleration from an F1 car, even in slippery conditions in a low gear. If you remove this most fundamental driving skill, what conceivable argument remains for not having ABS brakes, fluid automatic braking systems, and all the other driver aids we know to be possible? If we decide that F1 is principally a technical contest between the teams in which we seek to minimise the importance of the driver, there is no rational decision not to go all the way. I think they're saying,
and eliminate the driver.
Eliminate the driver, plug in the computer and away you go.
Mm-hmm.
But they are looking like they're going to have to go to change.
Real size, like 1-to-1 scale AFX.
Yeah, they've been talking about that for some time, but there are going to be some other changes. There is a very, very strong push on in Formula 1 to go back to low effect from aerodynamics, big wings, and also some of the underbody Venturi ground effects, very similar to like the Williams FW08 and FW07 ran times of Alan Jones, because they believe that if they go back to that type of formula where the wings have less impact, you get some body effects, downforce, but you have a lot of mechanical grip, and I'll get back to some real racing.
Yeah, because that was one of the first things that Colin Chapman at Lotus and also Patrick Head at Williams found, that they had to go with very small wings on the front, otherwise they were upsetting the air going into the diffusers to get through the skirts. Look, I do want to change the subject from Formula 1, because we are going to talk about that a little bit later on, but drag racing fans, and I would like everyone who is a big drag racing fan and Chrysler fan as well, so that leaves Lesmo out there, the only one left in that category, but Peter Norton, his postcard from America this week is from the Detroit International Motor Show and has got quite a bit to say about the new cars, the concept cars. Now, I was fortunate enough that Peter sent me the report over that he has done. He also sent me some pictures that he had taken at the event. So unlike some of you that will have to wait till the magazines come out to see what these cars look like, I've got a bit of a sneak preview, and I will tell you now, when he says they're ugly, he means coyote ugly. He means dingo ugly. They are.
And triple baggers.
Yeah, that's right. And but when he starts talking about the good-looking cars, believe him, they are sleek. So anyway, we will have that one coming up very, very soon, along with John Hughes and heaps more. But I would like to do some drag racing now, because it was a bit remiss of us. We got a bit carried away last week and didn't get through the drag racing stories. One of the big stories, of course, was up there at Willowbank Raceway, and I've seen reports in the press since. I'm only going by official press releases here, but I've seen reports in the press saying that Willowbank's going to be banned from drag racing competition and all this sort of crap. And I'll just give you this piece of news which came through on Thursday, remembering that the papers have to hack up their stories and make up their stories, as in some cases, by Tuesday night. So on Thursday, the release coming through to the Inside Motorsport office was that Andrew has approved the request by Willowbank Raceway this week to reschedule the third round of the 1999-2000 Australian Pro Stock Championship, lost to rain last Saturday. This means that April 15th event at Willowbank will present the best sedans in motorsport on the same program. The awesome top door slammers and the classy Pro Stocks will be there racing together. The event will become the third round of the prestigious Castrol New Year Series and will incorporate the South Queensland round of the Australian Drag Racing Series. The Chief Executive Officer of Andra, Tony Thornton, said he was pleased that Willowbank had demonstrated its confidence with Pro Stock taking this step. The April event already had a number of draw cards, and the loss of the January race could have been easy for the Willowbank team. The same is true for the racers who travelled north, but the timing of the April race is good for Pro Stock, and the feedback from the drivers has already been positive. The next round of the Pro Stock Championship will be at the Nationals down there at Calder Park on February 19, and of course our very good friend Les Binkhorst and Top Fuel Tony Galea will be down there covering it for us, so we can't wait for a very big 2000 Nationals. I've been having this this 1999 thing on the brain this weekend, and it's really got to go. But good news for Gary Phillips. He has had a staggering record of success in top alcohol, and it continued last weekend. And it's interesting to see Andra splitting up the series and letting them run in different places all on the same weekend, because the top alcohol boys were down there in Adelaide whilst the Pro Stock boys up there in Queensland. It was a hard-fought victory for Gary Phillips over the runner-up Mark Brew right through qualifying and eliminations. The qualifying opened in hot overcast conditions, and Phillips, with a 5.93 opener, was eclipsed by a great 5.85 from Sydney's Wayne Newby at a slow 203 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. That, for people who want to talk real money, is 325 kilometres an hour. In a second, disaster struck when Brisbane Steve Harker, fresh from competing in a range of events in the USA, collided with the barriers at the Adelaide International Dragway. And although the Dodge Avenger that had moved 100 metres down the track was travelling at high speed, it turned hard right and hit a concrete wall after a severe tyre shake. When the car came at half track, Harker was assisted from the wreck with no serious injuries. The body and the chassis were totally destroyed, along with a number of other components, and Harker was considering his options when returning to the track after the medical check. In the third session, Brew took the Romac Dragster out at a 5.83 at 240.96 miles an hour and moved to the top of the list ahead of Phillips with a 5.84. Brew's speed stood as the best for the event, earning him a bonus point, whilst Wayne Newby's earlier performance put him in a solid third position. But major engine work required before the start of eliminations had seen him out of the action. Sydney Dean Oakey ended up fourth spot on the qualifying tree with a 6.15, and Adelaide's Frank Ininti and Victorian's Matthew Featon and Tom Easton rounded out the elimination brackets. although Brew had a bye in the first round, crew chief Bob Brackham said the huge crowd, estimated at more than 13,000 people, deserved a show and produced a strong six-second pass. Oakley's 6.11 was more than enough to get in front of Intinny's small block dragster. Philip produced enough with a 5.87 to beat Easton's Altered, which then continued to experience chronic tyre shake. And Newby's great efforts in the pits was not rewarded when the engine backfired on the burnout and burst open the panel, giving Featon an easy win. Featon's 6.9 in the semi-final couldn't match a 5.88 from Phillips in the Lucas Oil Products dragster. Brew's 5.79 stood as the best elapsed time of the night and bested Oakey's 6.04. The pressure was on, but the two Queensland dragsters produced one of the best races of the night when they faced the Christmas tree for the last time. It was Phillips all the way, nearly a tenth of a second better at the start, a tenth quicker to the finish line with a 5.84. Remember, that was his qualifying time. 5.84 at 6 miles an hour faster than his terminal speed of 248.38 terminal speed, less than a mile per hour short of Brew's best. So with all performance bonuses going to the runner-up, Brew with just 10 points behind Phillips in the championship. Gary Phillips going 100 points, Mark Broome 90, Dean Oakey on 60, Matthew Featon on 60, Frank Inty on 40, Tom Easton on 40, Newby and Harker both also with 40 points. But the drag racing doesn't stop there. Why did I pick to do drag racing first?
Yes.
The first round of the Pro Stock Motorcycle event was on at Adelaide as well. Sam Skerry from South Australia took out 110 points with Top ET and also taking out the win. Chris Grossi, 80 points. Paul Andrews from Victoria, 60. Jason Lee on 60. David Hines on 40. Neville Langley on 40. Morris Allen, 40. Angelo Giannis on 40. And Phil Howard on 20 points. In the top door slammers, rain affected the event up there in Queensland, as it did with the Pro Stocks. And it was Victor Bray in Perth that allowed Adelaide's David Coop, who travelled north, to remain at the top of his points list. Unfortunately, they didn't send me through the points list when they sent me the rest of the information there. But drag racing, that sort of wraps up all of last weekend's racing action. And I'm not sure, did you have a follow-up on that one, Colin?
Drag racing, no, not on the drag racing. I've got some stuff on sports car racing, in particular, in terms of the American Le Mans series, which we're going to see a round of. It's interesting, they call it the American Le Mans series and it comes to Australia. Okay, and Canada. Makes me.
Nürburgring in Germany and Silverstone in England.
So, yeah, very interesting. But the words.
If I took my mic on before I say
that. But interesting the fact that there's a couple of announcements made during the week. One, the fact that Audi's going to be running a two car team of the new Audi R8R Evolution models. And they'll make their debut at the Sebring 12 Hours on March 18th, entered in the name of Audi Sport North America, but run by Yost Racing. Yost, well known for winning Le Mans a couple of times. And they'll be running there in the American Le Mans Series, funded basically by Audi of America, so we probably won't expect to see them outside of the US because of that sort of funding. However, the cars will also be making an appearance at Le Mans, and they'll sort of do their racing there. But the good news for people who are interested in the race taking place down in Adelaide December 31st, 2000, is that at the Autosport show in Birmingham last week, Le Mans Series founder Don Panoz announced that the outright and class winners, that's the winners of the prototype GDS and GD classes in Adelaide, will have guaranteed grid positions for the 2001 Le Mans 24 Hours. Adelaide will be only one of three races in the 12-round 2000 Le Mans Series in which victory will guarantee a place on the packed Le Mans 24-hour grid. Adelaide will join the Road Atlanta Petite Le Mans event in the US and the new Nürburgring race in Germany as direct qualifying events. So that will guarantee that a lot of the teams and a lot of the drivers will come down to Adelaide, because if they want to get into Le Mans, that's where they'll go. And particularly if there's any new manufacturers who want to come in, come down, run in Adelaide. And of course, there'll be a lot of kudos with winning on the old Australian Grand Prix circuit there in Adelaide, which is what they'll be running on. At this point in time, Panoz Racing has committed to the entire Le Mans series in 2000. There's also expected teams from Audi, the Chevrolet Corvette, Dodge Vipers, etc. And there's expected very soon announcement that BMW will get involved via the Schnitzer team, funded by BMW of the USA. So that'll bring some interesting racing over to Australia. Moving back more directly to Australia, word this week that BOC Gas's Australian Super Touring Champion Paul Morris has won the prestigious BMW Sports Trophy. The sports BMW Sports Trophy carries a prize of around about $54,000 Australian dollars and is for his outstanding performances in a non-works BMW during 1999, and it's an award that is made by BMW to the most successful non-works BMW driver in touring car racing worldwide. Morris claimed the 1999 Australian Super Touring Championship title in his first year as a team owner, winning 9 of the 21 races in a BMW 320i, also winning the rain-shortened 5,000km Super Touring Endurance race at Bathurst in October, and finishing high up in the gear touring car events at the Macau Grand Prix. So good to see that Paul Morris has won that. He's actually the second successive Australian to win the award, being won last year by Cameron McLean, who was the 1998-1999 winner. And it'll be interesting to see if that sort of helps Morris stick with BMW, because he did have a few ideas in terms of jumping elsewhere. Over in the UK as well, in terms of the British Touring Car Championship, there's sort of all sorts of stories flying around that Toker may have lost control of the British Touring Car Championship to a rival group called British Motorsport Promoters, who have supposedly won the deal to organise the series from 2002 onwards from the Motorsport Association, who are the governing body and owner of the British Touring Car Championship. At this point in time, nothing has been firmed up in regards to that, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes, because the British Motorsport Promoters, the people, are also pushing the new V6 V8 category, which has been designed by Andy Rouse, called Supercars, which has a familiar ring to it. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops over the next week or so. But I'd say that given the way that Toker and Alan Gow in particular handle things, he won't go down fighting. And it's amazing how these things happen. Somebody has something running successfully, has a bit of a hiccup, and the vultures are out to pick at the bones.
Journeys. Sorry. Joining us on his way for the World Series Sprint Cars concluded at the last night Parramatta City Raceway, and Donny Schott showed a class act that he is once again when he finished the season in the same way he started. John Hughes joins us on the line now, and Donny Schott's certainly a man to really look forward to seeing out here once again, because he put on a fantastic display right across the country.
Yes, he did. He fell in, started off very strong, Craig, but fell into a bit of a hole about a third of the way through the series. Up until then, he'd clean sweep everything, and there were plenty of people of the view that, you know, that he was going to take all of the wins, but that wasn't to be. Skip Jackson stopped him at Horsham, and since then, he certainly fell in a bit of a hole, but he made up for that with a fine win last night at Parramatta at the final round.
Yes, he did indeed, and Skip Jackson managing to come through for a second place. Brooke Tatnall gating third, and as we had spoken to Brooke Tatnall last week, he had wrapped up the series virtually by winning up there in Queensland last weekend.
Yes, that's right. A very strong win was too. And, you know, worth a bit more money than most of the series rounds, but certainly it was a strong performance, and that's what we've come to expect from Brooke over the latter part of this series, because, of course, he had to come from behind to take the series this year.
And like a lot of the World Racing Series now, a formal presentation dinner marks the end of the championship, which you're about to head off to tonight.
That's right. We have a function tonight at the Park Royal in Parramatta, and we're looking forward to that. Quite a number of guests, and we'll be presenting the trophies to all the successful drivers and teams.
All right then, John. A great year for you. Maybe a little bit rain affected more than what you'd like, but crowds were up, car numbers were up, and the racing was of the highest standard ever.
Certainly was. From Christmas on, really, the crowds just got stronger and stronger, and that's a great sign. It fills you with confidence for the future of sprint car racing in Australia, and I guess we can look forward to a, bigger and better season next year.
Yeah. John Hughes, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you right throughout the season. The Speedway season by no means is finishing off at the moment, with plenty of racing still to come for sprint cars and, of course, the Super Sedan titles being held down there in Tasmania this weekend.
Yeah, plenty of Speedway. This is the high part of the season, so there's whatever sort of brand of Speedway you like, there's plenty for the fans to look forward to.
Thanks very much for your help all through the season.
Okay, Craig.
Yeah, and going back to sprint cars, the Pennzoil World of Outlaws Series inaugural race at Texas Motor Speedway is a little more than 2 months away, and officials are already making plans to accommodate the many fans clamouring for tickets. That was only one item of news swirling around the Texas Tour 2000 Media Day festivities at the world's most modern speedway last Thursday. "We're concerned that the normal sprint car fan used to walking up to the gate and buying a ticket," Executive Vice President and General Manager of Texas Motor Speedway, Eddie Gossage, said. "I'm not sure we're going to have any tickets available the day of the race. That's a nice problem to have, but it's definitely a problem. We don't want to offend or hurt anybody. The fans need to buy their tickets now." So obviously getting the trick of buying advanced ticket sales. They originally started out with 14,000 seats, and now they're looking at how to handle an overflow to increase an even large crowd. The Texas Motor Speedway, the series will be visiting there March 30th, 31st, October 12th and 14th. They then go to Las Vegas Motor Speedway March 2nd, 4th and October 31st, November 1st. Lowe's Motor Speedway May 25th, 26th and October 5th, 6th. And Bristol Motor Speedway on the 9th and 10th. So looks like it's coming up very, very well. And one of the people there, a little quote here, that King of the Outlaws, Steve Kinzer, can't wait to drive his number 11 Quaker State Maxima on Texas Motor Speedway's semi-banked 4/10 of a mile oval. It's still dirt track racing, but it's great to be able to bring your hauler in on pavement, have a nice clean place to work on the cars, and still go out and have a good dirt race, track race. It's a little story. Why, if you're just racing on a dirt track, you don't need to have dirt in the pits and the paddock area as well. It needs to be tarmac. Actually, I reckon a few of the motor racing circuits around Australia could take note of that one as well.
Yeah. Why did they race on tarmac and park on dirt, I think is the question. And then you get away to a park and it's just all beautifully laid out for you.
Yeah.
Okay, from Avalon, I have to thank Glenn for these, because he was down there in Avalon last night. The speed cars having quite a interesting show there, and it was New South Wales drivers that dominated, with Dave Lambert taking his second win for the season after breaking the drought at Bacchus Marsh. He's come back down to Victoria and had success once again there in the Morton and May car. Craig Brady coming in second place, putting on a good job there. Brady knocking back the opportunity to go and race in New Zealand over the Christmas period, and has found success in and around New South Wales, and now second place in Avalon. Jaron Jenkins coming in third, and Brett Morris coming in fourth position. Now, this week's postcard from America, Peter Norton was in Detroit for their International Motor Show, which is his feature for this week.
Craig, I've seen a lot of automobiles, and I'm not sure if I like it. This weekend, I made the journey down to Detroit to the North American International Auto Show. Now, first of all, let's go through some of the statistics. There are 40 manufacturers represented at the show. They bring along 700 cars, and that 700 cars are valued at $175 million US. And approximately 70,000 people have a look through the show every day. But then on weekends, it's over 100,000 on a Saturday or a Sunday. So yes, it's not only the home of the big three automakers, General Motors, Ford and Chrysler. Detroit is the home of a really big auto show. And the show, of course, plays a big part of their publicity for their new releases, as part of their brand building and a big part of their public relations. But with a show so big, you have to do a lot to get noticed. You have to make a lot of noise, do something bold, do something to stand out. Otherwise, you'll just get lost in all of the other events, all the other vehicles that are there. And it was reported that General Motors had spent a lot of money on their exhibit. They were a little bit coy about how much they spent. It was estimated to be somewhere between $10 and $100 million. The General Motors representative was a little coy there about exactly how much they spent. And, yes, they definitely spent the $10 million. I'd say it's probably in the middle there, 50 or something. You could see how they've spent their money. And sorry, guys at GM, your strategy and your exhibit missed the mark for me somewhat, although I'm sure it did achieve some of your objectives. with its live show and warm and fuzzy theme in the show, but to me it was a bit of a big deal, a bit of a yawn. However, I could see what their strategy was. It was a fair bit of union hugging. That's right. This auto show, of course, is attended by thousands upon the thousands of employees of the auto companies. So that a lot of the themes were about pride in their brand, appreciation of their employees, all of that type of thing. For my money, I think Chrysler got better value for their money. They didn't spend as much on the infrastructure and the big stand, but they got a lot more impact. They had dancers that sprang from the ceiling on bungee cords and doing acrobatic things with loud music and flashing lights, a lot more effective, and that was really quite interesting. So, but what about the future? Well, the future was represented in a couple of different levels. First of all is the very real future, some of their new releases, and there are quite a few of the new family sedans and minivans and all that type of stuff. You could tell where they were because that's where the gaps in the crowd were, and no one was particularly interested in the family sedans or minivans, and it's quite interesting that the biggest selling car in the US at the moment, Toyota Camry, has a huge market share. Absolutely no fuss at all on the Toyota stand to help sell Camrys. I think they must be selling themselves. The interest is in sports cars and trucks, and in particular the trucks. And some of the new features coming along, of course, are things like GPS, having phones built into the car. So if you get lost, you push a button, you get an operator who can help give you directions. One example was, I wonder where a mailbox is. Push the button, and the friendly operator gave you directions to the nearest mailbox. Pretty corny, but that's one of the very real things that are here now in some of the new models. Looking much further into the future, of course we're looking at electric cars, the hybrid cars with the gasoline and electric engines, and also some of the fuel cells, the hydrogen engines and things like that. Of course the petroleum products will run out eventually. Also in the longer term trends is a lot of technology, a lot of internet things. Ford's concept car, which they call 24/7, it's called 24/7 because it's connected to the internet and to the world 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A funny little concept car that's sort of a half-drawn sketch, rather boxy looking. But looking to the very near future, some of the concept cars or some of the near production cars that were there, the trend is very much going towards versatile vehicles and a heavy emphasis on lifestyle. Now, as I said, the minivans were boring. No one particularly cared about them, but everyone knows they're clever. Clever use of space and some clever design principles. Well, take those design principles, squeeze them into a four-wheel drive type of Chevy. So you've got a four-wheel drive, but you're sitting upright, got lots of space. Now, still looks rather boring. So let's put some emphasis in our marketing on outdoor activities. We have to bolt on to have all our salespeople dressed ready for mountaineering type things. Have to do a few little tricks to make it compatible to tailgate parties. Yes, they go to the car park for a football game and sit in the tailgate of their car and drink some beers, play loud music. Lifestyle focus for selling these things. Okay, we've got a more interesting car, but it still looks like a van. What are we going to do? And we saw very clearly what the strategy is. Make it big and bold. Lots of square and harsh angles. A lot of inspiration seems to have been drawn from the Hummer, the military vehicle. Very harsh standout designs on these things. Some people speculated that really it was that the computers couldn't draw a curve. Everything's a straight line and nasty angles. Now, these things are big, as I said. Big names as well. General Motors have Avalanche and Teradyne. Dodge have the Max Cab. Ford have big names like Equator, Escape, and Lincoln have the Mountaineer. You get the general theme there. These are very active vehicles. But the real prize of the show goes to Pontiac. It was a concept car last year, and here it was shown in the model that will hit the showrooms later this year. They call it the Aztec, and it has all of these principles. You can get the four-wheel drive option, plenty of space, very versatile, a lot of marketing on lifestyle. Hey, check these features out. The console between the front seats where you put your CDs and tapes, it's an Esky. You can fill it full of your favourite beverage and throw some ice in there. the car stereo. You can open the tailgate at the back, and there are stereo controls at the back, and the back speakers point out the back to entertain your friends at your tailgate party. The tailgate that you fold down is even contoured into little seats, so your backside is nice and comfy for your tailgate party. I don't know if I'd be buying a vehicle worth many thousands of dollars just for tailgate parties, but you get the idea. It's all about lifestyle. Now, the problem with the Aztek is that it's sort of tall. It's pseudo-minivan in some ways, so that's why they're disguising it, I think, with some of these harsh, horrible angles. I think without the disguise, it's a bit bigger, but similar concept to, I think it was a Toyota Tercel when they first came out in Australia. It was four-wheel drive, sitting very upright, interesting car, but quite different. That's the type of inspiration, I think, that's inside these cars, except they've gone bigger, put in more powerful engines. This Aztek has great towing capacity from its V6, but they have to disguise it. And what they've really done is they've put a dog-ugly front on this thing to hide just how tall and boxy it really is. So that was our prize for the ugly car of the year award. It's a shocker. I'm sure you'll get photos of it. The other interesting aspect on these new cars is the comeback of the twin cab. I don't think it was actually a comeback in the US. They've gone for the full station wagon or a single cab. But the new concept now is to go for a twin cab. So you've got the full-size seating in the front, but you've got a bit of a tray at the back. But the innovation now is that the rear window collapses and the back of the rear seats fold away, and all of a sudden you've got a full-length truck bed, giving you, the versatility of a four-seater, or fold the seat down, two-seater, and a big open space in the back. So that's quite an interesting innovation that I think might catch on. Me, for one, I think I could use something like that. It'd be handy for rally gear and that type of stuff for service vehicles. Now, thankfully, the future isn't only about these trucks with horrible shapes. Thankfully, there are some sports cars still coming through. But unfortunately, the good ones are getting more expensive. The only people producing these little stylish ones are the top-line marques. Bugatti had a very stylish vehicle there, and some beautiful curves. It looks like it's doing 100 miles an hour, even though it's stopped. Other notable cars are from Mercedes, with some of the roadsters that they're designing and developing. I have to say, the new model Ferraris, sort of going back a few years, capturing the real road car spirit rather than dressing up a Formula One car and trying to get it registered. Some very nice lines in the Ferraris. Again, Chrysler also getting some of their typical retro look and some nice curves into their cars. But for me, the showstopper was from Jaguar, their F-Type concept car. It's fantastic. The open-top two-seater, which is capturing the classic curves from the 1960s that the Jaguars were so famous for. It is a stunner. Do yourself a favour, go find a photo of that one. It's lovely. I wanted one of those. So, but is there any motorsports in this show? Well, yes, there was a bit of motorsport. I would have to say that it was a little disappointing that some of these manufacturers were not as proud of their motorsport achievements as I thought they might have been. And some of them are quite ironical what they are putting on show as well. General Motors, they were very proud of their NASCAR achievements. Hang on, Ford won the championship last year. Anyway, you get the idea there. So GM were also very proud of their involvement in the Indy Racing League. Unfortunately, it's a control formula, and it's not actually reinvesting that technology into their road cars. It's really a rather static idea, that one. From Chrysler, they had on display their new NASCAR, which will be hitting the tracks in February of 2001. Nothing too standout in design there. It's the sort of Dodge Intrepid style of car, just dressed up as a NASCAR. Interesting display was at Toyota. They had on display the Chip Ganassi Targets kart vehicle that went to four championships. But hang on, they were very proud of the four championships at the Toyota stand. It was a Honda engine that carried them to those championships. They still have to prove what Toyota can do in that vehicle in this coming year.
Cadillac had on display their new Le Mans vehicle that's taken on an attack there. Quite striking. Nothing stood out too much there. It's the typical Le Mans open sports car of current years. And Audi had on display the vehicle they raced there in 99, and they were proudly displaying their, third place trophy. Anyway, you get the idea there as well. Ferrari had on display their Formula One car, and one that generated quite a bit of interest was at BMW. They had the Williams Formula One car in the new design and the new colours. We went out of our way to see what names were written on the side, and it had Schumacher. There was no mention of whether Zanardi was going to be attached to that one or not. And of course Subaru had one of their WRV Imprezas on display, which of course I got a buzz out of as well. But a notable omission in that list of motorsport pride was Ford. The manufacturer who, for my money, is most involved in the most motorsports around the world, you could have been mistaken of thinking that they didn't participate at all. No mention of their NASCAR achievements or anything else that would have been relevant to the people in Detroit. So that was quite puzzling. So anyway, next week we'll be back to a more typical motorsport news, results and gossip report. Until then, that's what I saw at the Detroit International Motor Show, and that's the way I see it over here. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, one of the following on from that about the BMW Williams situation, press release on Friday that Zanardi and Williams BMW would part company. Alex Zanardi and the Williams BMW team have parted company after a disappointing first season together in the 1999 Formula One World Championship, according to a statement released by the team. Two-time car champion Zanardi struggled last year in his return to Formula One and failed to score a single point for Williams' team. Although Zanardi had a year remaining in his contract, the Williams team released a statement that said, Williams Formula One and Alex Zanardi announced today a joint decision to terminate their Formula One relationship, with the effect that Alex Zanardi will not drive for the BMW Williams F1 team in 2000. This decision follows a difficult 1999 season for Alex and Williams F1. Zanardi's replacement will either be Britain's Jenson Button or Brazil's Bruno Junqueira. Both are tested for Williams at Spain's Jerez and Barcelona circuits, but weather and mechanical problems have limited their number of laps. Williams BMW will unveil its new car and name its new principal sponsor tomorrow, January 24th, at the Barcelona circuit. And the team hopes to announce which of these two drivers will be Ralf Schumacher's teammate for the 2000 season. The team has stated, however, that if the two prospective drivers do not get enough testing mileage done before January 24th, the decision will be delayed until sometime before the end of the month. So that'll be interesting to see how things go. Of course, other news.
Burton is the hot tip there, the 17-year-old Englishman.
Jenson Button.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, the other interesting news this week, because they have the launch of Benetton, looking for new great things. They launched their car as well in Barcelona last Monday, and a rather ordinary looking car, I must admit, when I saw it. And Minardi is also looking good for this year. Of course, in 1999 they actually scored a point, which means now that all their travel to the various Formula One Grand Prix around the world is no longer coming out of their own pockets. So that's made them be able to pour back into the team and into the development of the car, etc. They've now done a deal to be supplied with a Ford Cosworth V10 engine, and they've also signed up Spanish telecommunications
company. Jaguar V10 engine?
Well, there's actually two different engines. So there's actually what will be a Ford V10 Cosworth engine, which Minardi will be using. Then there will be a Ford/Jaguar V10 engine that Stewart/Jaguar will be using. It's actually interesting. Stewart Grand Prix is one of those things where you sort of start thinking, oh, what's going on? And of course, how things, wheels work within wheels.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing I saw this week was advertising for positions, and it's Stewart Racing, a division of Jaguar Racing Limited. So Stewart still exists, and this is how they're getting around things in terms of like changing names. It seems like when Tom Walkinshaw had the problem with going from Footwork to Arrows, still Stewart Racing is the official entrant, but it's Jaguar Racing who's running it.
Okay, well, that's the parent company
of it. Yeah, so therefore that's how we get around this little problem.
Uh-huh.
But, other item of news this week on the Australian V8 scene is the fact that the Shell Championship Series point system has been revised. I've had a look at the point system. I'm afraid that it makes about as much sense as last year's, but supposedly it is much fairer. gives the first place getter a wider point break. They actually get a, instead of getting a 2 point break, they get a 4 point break between first and second, and then 2 points down to 20th place. The FIA 1000, Clipsal 500 in Adelaide, and the National Capital 100 will all be worth a total of 240 points per driver. So if you, that's if you win. So
the National Capital 100 isn't a twin driver affair, though.
I'm not sure. So they're saying it's 60 points on offer for winning the first two races in Canberra, and 120 up for grabs for winning the final. So
okay, the final's a double length race. Yeah.
So two short races, one longer race. Yeah, that's going to be fun. But anyhow, they've revised it all. Hopefully they say that the points tweaking will produce the best possible result at the end of the series,
which is, it goes down to the last race, right. I.e. what happened last year.
Yeah. And the year before.
All right. Now, the other thing there is the talk of floating companies, and it has been done successfully with CART and NASCAR, but the FIA fell over when Bernie Eccleston tried to franchise or float the Formula One, but it seems like Avesco aren't going to be stalled by F1's disasters or dramas, and they are still planning to go ahead with a floating of the Avesco company. Now, at the moment, the Avesco company is made up of franchise owners, which of course each franchise owner can run, I think, three Group 1 cars, is that right?
Yeah, up to a maximum of three Group 1 cars, so you know, that's a possibility there. But the thing, there's a number of things they've got to do to actually get listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, and it's a thing in terms of having a profit test, a net tangible assets test, a number of other items they've got to get, hurdles they've got to get over. Now, of course, the thing is that, you know, what are Avesco's assets? What, you know, okay, they might get through the profit, but it's not as if they own the assets. So
it's a bit like the BTC's problem, like they own the format, the racing rules and everything like that. Right. But they don't actually own anything if no one bothers to build a car to run it.
That's right. So that's the problem they potentially can run into. So no doubt they'll work on that. They'll probably build up some assets to the required minimum in terms of property and various equipment they'll use at the racetracks, etc. When they reach that, then they'll be in the position they can do the flight successfully and legally.
All right, then. It has been an interesting off-season in road racing. We're about to get to set to go European road racing once again, Australian road racing once again, and I think we're going to have some interesting times ahead. But Speedway is nowhere near over, so over the next month or so, we're going to see the Australian titles for sprint cars, speed cars, and a whole host of others, Formula 500s, which have been putting on a great show, and a whole host of others, as I said. So plenty more coming up there, and as you could tell by the amount of drag racing that we got through tonight, there is heaps more coming up there, and we're also hoping to hear the results of both the Western Sydney Drag Racing and Speedway complex that have been proposed, but no land has been passed on to them yet, and also the decision coming down over the Canberra International Dragway, as that is set to be handed down fairly soon, and we're all hoping that that one will be passed out in favour of motorsport in Canberra, because we just going away to Shepparton on the weekend, the place was absolutely packed out and everyone wanted to see the long track there. Now, one of the reasons why we haven't got the long track here this year is because of just restrictive practices put in place and bonds that needed to be put up for noise curfews.
And that's the thing, that given the right sort of situation, the right sort of arrangement, you know, it is possible for a good motor racing circuit to be built in the Canberra region, a permanent motor racing circuit. Not the temporary one we're going to have for the National Capital 100, which is one of my gripes with the event. The money spent on the event could have been spent on a permanent circuit where people would go and, you know, practice driver training for the rest of the year, but also offer facilities for, you know, drag strip to one side, kart racing, you name it. And the thing is that there is a need for that type of thing around the Canberra region, and it actually could bring good dollars into the region. That's the reason why people keep building motor racing circuits and trying to get motor racers in, is that it can bring money in if it's handled correctly. And by putting it in a location that is away from where you need to have noise curfews and the like, great. For example, under the flight path down Madura Lane.
Yes, that is an interesting one. We'll have more about flight paths coming up on next week's show as well.
Yeah.
slot pass is something that eventually is going to be taking over the slot after us. But until then, we'll just enjoy some more music as Tom is just about ready in Studio A for Inside Motorsport this week. Colin, thanks very much for taking the burden off me.
No worries. We'll have hopefully a bit more luck with our technology next week and have a lot of good news and some interviews and be back with a bit more about some of these Formula One launches. I have a sneaking suspicion there's probably a few Australian V8 supercar launches planned for the next week or so in the lead up to Phillip Island. We've got the announcement of Tony Longhurst's sponsors for his new setup. There'll be the announcement of Brad Jones's new sponsorship hopefully next week or so. So we've got a lot of things coming down the line.
I'd like to see RX Audi sponsor his new supercar program myself.
I don't think so somehow.
No reason why they can't.
Might
not get much factory support.
That's true. Particularly if he's running a Ford and it's got Audi written all over it. But then again, no, I think we'll probably find that some more traditional sponsor will probably come in and run on that car for him. And yeah, and there's also, of course, the long-awaited new livery colour scheme for the Holden Racing Team, where it's rumoured very much to become a Holden Racing Team rather than the Mobil Holden Racing Team. Mobil taking very much a back seat as Holden goes head-to-head with the Ford, Tickford Ford Racing Team of Glenn Seaton in terms of market branding, which it's all about these days.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.
Now, changing your will is just as easy as making your will.
Not be talking about it.
True.
Anyway, the next edition of Motorsport News, as you said, Craig Lowndes is going to be speaking about how they are planning at HRT to defend their title, even though you've put the mockers on them once a month for rest of the season.
No one puts the mockers on HRT. We're really profiling success in this issue. Craig Lowndes, of course, looking for his fourth title out of four attempts. Our other feature interview this week is with Adrian Newey, the man who won two world championships at Williams, three as a matter of fact, and now two at McLaren as chief designer. What makes him tick? Where's he come from? What's he done? Of course, all the Speedway news. Drag racing's latest and greatest. We've got exclusive first look at Cruz Pedregon's new car in the USA, his new funny car. What else have we got in the magazine? I'm just trying to think at the moment.
The problem is when you're always trying to work a couple of issues ahead.
Yeah, we have. You've probably seen on the news, everyone around Australia probably saw over Christmas, New Year, some terrible weather in France. It's been decimating the communication system over there to the extent that Joe Saywood has been actually running out of the house to recharge his computer so he can send us the Formula One news. And last I saw, he was still without power, so he really has gone above and beyond the call of duty. Of course, the latest sports car gossip, IndyCar testing started last week, a number of changes going on there. Tony Kanaan may be swapping teams at this late stage bit in the pre-season in IndyCar racing.
Yeah, well, quite a lot of teams deciding not to run lights cars and a few changes just in ownership and everything going on in kart as well, which, because the money's not there like Formula One, you don't sort of look at it with such amazement and awe.
That's true. Looks like there will now be no kart teams running the Indy 500 in IRL.
Well, it's a bit hard when no kart teams run the same manufacturer's engine as what has to be run at the IRL.
That's been part of the problem, that and budget. IRL testing is in full swing. Al Unser's been setting some very good times. Of course, new engine category, new engine formula this year for the Indy Racing League. Sarah Fisher won't be running in the first race at Disney World, unfortunately. So it'll be an all-male field.
Well, it's an interesting topic, that which I'm not going to get into this time. But Motorsport News is on the newsstands, and the start of the Moffat and Brock exclusive one, a great headline, Best of Enemies. Of course, there are duels on the track everyone remembers, and if they don't remember it, they've seen the footage of it that many times now, that they feel like they're part of it. But more importantly, you can start collecting the coupons that will get you... It's a double whammy, because one, you get to bang around the Albert Park Grand Prix track, and two, you get to sit next to Moffat or Brock.
That's true. Not only that, of course, voting for the Motorsport Personality of the Year, your final chance to do that.
The voting's been extraordinarily close. I'm not saying who's ahead or who's behind at the moment, but in all sorts of categories it's been very close. And your chance to get tickets for the Motorsport Awards coming up in February, and it's always a good night as well.
All right then. So, as I said, you need to get this week's Motorsport News, and then you've got all of about 3 days to read it before the next one hits the stands and at the end of next week.
That's right.
Bill Brennan, it's been a pleasure as always. Happy New Year, and I know that it is going to be another big season of motorsport, which means there's going to be plenty of reading in Motorsport News.
That's going to be a fun year, and Happy New Year to everyone on all the listeners.
And also this week news through once again that more good news for Australian motorsport, the fact the Northern Territory Government will be backing the Australian Safari, the Australian National Cross Country Motorsport Rally for the next 3 years, thus securing the event for the Territory into the new millennium. The 2001 Safari from August 20th to 27th 2000 will be fully sanctioned by the world.
It'll be fully functional too, I'm sure.
Yes, it's fully functional, fully sanctioned by the world controlling FIA and the FIM. So the event is for both four-wheel and two-wheel vehicles. Again, Bruce Garland, who's a defending champion, he'll be out there to do his thing. And the event will be actually set up by Octagon Motorsports, the people who ran Bathurst in 1999, so I wish them more luck there with the weather. And Queenslander Bob Carpenter, who is the man who set up the courses for the safaris the last few years, he'll be setting it up again for 2000, tweaking the course a little bit here and there to make it tough, fair and most of all fun. The proposed course for 2000 will be from Alice Springs through Tennant Creek and Catherine to Darwin. And the route from Alice Springs and Darwin provides some of the most exciting and challenging competitive stages in international cross-country rallying. So that should be good stuff there. Internationally, Brooksby has committed to the Lotus Elise GT3. Lotus Motorsport is the latest manufacturer offering to build cars for the new GT3 category, following news that Brooksby Racing is to field a pair of Elises in the Privilege Insurance British GT Championship next season. We've spotted the potential of the Elise in the new class, and we've made sure that we are the first team in the championship to get our hands on, said team boss Martin Braybrook. The cars were based on the lease models being produced for the company's new One Make series and are expected to run at around 700 kilograms with more than 230 brake horsepower on tap. I reckon they'd be one little wild car.
Yeah. And if you think the weather over Christmas was a bit cold and miserable, spare a thought for our USA correspondent, Peter Norton.
Yes.
Spare a thought for him. He's that cold that he can't even be bothered talking to us.
Yes, good evening, Craig. The temperature here in Toronto was still, you know, minus 5 or so during the day, so as you can imagine, there's not a lot of live motorsport action to be found nearby. However, North American motorsport is awakening from its Christmas slumber in the form of some testing and practice way down south in places like Florida, a little bit of action in California and Texas as well. Anywhere where there's no frost and snow, I think they're trying to do a bit of practice and testing, getting ready for the events that start in a couple of weeks' time. And perhaps the number one event that kicks off the year is the Rolex 24-hour event from Daytona. And this is the sports car race, definitely not NASCAR race. And the big story there is one particular team who will be fighting it out for an outright victory, and it has the oldest and the youngest drivers in the race. And the oldest driver, of course, is the talking point, movie star Paul Newman. Shareholder in the Newman Haas Kart team, he's decided to come back from semi-retirement from driving and actually get into the driving seat and give a pretty serious shake and see if he can win this event outright. And the latest news this week is that poor old Mr. Newman lost control of his 420 horsepower Porsche, managing to roll a car onto its roof and make quite a bit of damage. Luckily, he's okay. Had a few bruises, bruised ribs and a few things like that, but nothing too serious, thank goodness. Damaged pride, I guess, is the main thing. And we'll keep you posted in terms of how Paul and his team goes in that race. I think it kicks off early February. This was just a testing and trials day that he was running at. And basically he put it down that he was overconfident on some fresh tyres. So, whoops, bit of bad luck there for Paul Newman. And further up north, of course, where it's far too cold to go outside, one of the world's biggest auto shows kicks off. And that's, of course, the North American International Auto Show in Detroit. It kicks off on January 9th with a couple of media days, and that's when I think everyone will hear a few stories about, you know, some of the latest concept cars,
We should see some photos coming from that, and also most of the major companies make announcements about what exciting things they've got coming up in the next few years. And it is definitely a big auto show. They've got some 700 cars, minivans, sport utilities and pickups from 40 manufacturers, and they estimate that the cars on show will be valued at $175 million. So, yeah, this is a pretty big deal. And it is a major show. It's been running for 84 years. So I'm pretty excited about getting down and checking out that rather large event. And I'll let everyone know exactly what I find and see if I can find any gems there. Now, I mentioned that the North American season is getting ready to kick off. We might as well run through a few of the lead-up things. The CART series kicks off March 26th from Homestead in Florida. So we've got a few weeks before anything happens there. A little bit of news there. As I said, people are doing a bit of testing and practicing. And one press release came from the Patrick Racing team, where Super Sub Roberto Moreno has a full season drive this year. And they're pretty happy with how things are going. Still sort of settling into the team, getting some good times, but I think they're pretty happy that the year ahead should hold some pretty promising times for them. Also in Florida, the IRL series kicks off from Walt Disney World. They've got a small super speedway there, and it kicks off on January 29th. And in some of the practice leading up to that event, IRL racer Sam Schmidt had a bit of an accident, and he was quite seriously injured when he crashed into the wall at turn two. And he's got a few problems there with his back and stuff like that, and some paralysis. But I think the doctors are fairly confident that that he'll make a fairly good recovery. Whether he returns to racing remains to be seen. Poor old Sam has been having a pretty tough time. In the last race of last season, he had an accident. And he's just back in the car after fracturing his foot and damaging his toe as a result of that previous accident. So all the best wishes to Sam on a speedy recovery from that one. Jumping across to NASCAR, of course NASCAR kick off with the Grand Final as the first event. Not the Grand Final for the series, but it's really the most prestigious, biggest event of the calendar. And of course I'm talking about the Daytona 500, which kicks off on February 20. They have a whole week of speed events there in terms of the qualifying, and they have some of the supporting events in the days leading up to it. Some of the news from NASCAR, we've got Andy Rouse Racing. They've lost one of their sponsors for one of their other cars. The blow that has come to the TV Guide team, it's the number 16 Ford Taurus driven by Kevin LePage. They're still going to proceed with the season even without any major sponsorship, hoping to fill the gap. They'll be at Daytona, of course. They'll look to fill that gap in the weeks to come, but it really is quite a major blow losing your major sponsor this late in the pre-season. They're going to have to move pretty quickly. Roush Racing is quite a major team. They've got some financial resources there that they'll be able to work their way through this one for sure. Still with NASCAR, the Ford teams are all busy now testing the 2000 Taurus. There'll be a couple of slight changes to the shape there. Not a major change to the car, I don't think, but they're all pretty busy doing some testing. And one major driver who is missing the testing is Rusty Wallace. He was actually taking flying lessons over in Arizona to maintain his private pilot's license. But I guess the more important thing for him is that last month he broke a shoulder in a skiing accident. But he says physically he's quite fine and he's ready to go, and it won't affect his drive in Daytona, but he is missing out on some of the testing. They've got the Penske test pilot, Buddy Baker, who will be doing the testing work at Talladega in the lead up there and testing out the 2000 race car for them. Another driver who's missing the testing of the 2000 Taurus is Mark Martin. Now, he had a fairly tough season last year. He did very well in the points score. I think he finished third. But what made his 1999 so miserable were the injuries he suffered after a July practice crash at Daytona, where he managed to fracture his part of his knee, fractured a few wrists and ribs, and basically had to be lifted in and out of the car for many, many races after that. And the most remarkable thing of all is that for the number of races after that accident, he never missed a lap of racing. And that really is quite an amazing effort. He really is quite a battler. And that even went into the fact that for the whole season, he was carrying some back injuries from many years of the bump and grind of NASCAR racing. And the big news for Mark, of course, was the very day after the last event of the year, he went straight into hospital and had some back surgery to correct a few things in there. And apparently everything's going quite well, but he won't be doing any of the winter testing. He'll be back in the car in the lead-up to the Daytona 500. And from all accounts, he'll be fighting fit, ready to go. And it'll be interesting, his run at Daytona. We know that Dale Earnhardt finally won Daytona. I think it was his 20th attempt. Mark Martin, he has not won it a single time in 18 attempts. So just covering some of the other series and when they kick off, the Busch series and the Craftsman's Trucks, all under the NASCAR banner, they also kick off in the lead up to Daytona, so February 19 and February 18 there. And the NHRA, the drag racing, kicks off on February 6 over in California. Now, as you know, Craig, I don't know a lot about the drag racing over here, but I'm going to keep an eye on it and make a few reports on that from time to time as well. So,
Peter Norton there, joining us once again from America, and we look forward to him, and I know that a lot of you fans of the NHRA are going to be looking forward to his reports on drag racing. But, Colin, that's it for another week here at Inside Motorsport. Thanks very much for dropping in.
No worries, yeah, we'll be keep on dropping in during the year, as I say.
And, well, we get set now for the aviation show after this.
Now, changing your will is just as easy as making your will with the Australian Legal Will Kit free updates. Simply follow the instructions and fill in the blank spaces. The Australian...
the country, then it would be an obvious thing for us to be coming in, interested in, and certainly I'll be going across to the World Rally Championship event over in Perth in early November, and just to catch up, being some time since I've been in the WRC game, catch up to what's going on, and see if we can't lay some plans for the future. Remember that we are looking at a long-term involvement this time. I'm laying a five-year plan, and certainly we do need to look at the business cases, not just on the Falcon program, but across the other range of vehicles that Ford do import to the country.
I remember, it was a while ago now, before the V8 supercar class took on its last or its most recent form, Fred Gibson had been running the Nissan so successfully, and he had a press conference announcing which brand he was going with. And at that press conference, and you may or may not have seen the footage or even been involved with this press conference, but he said, "I've gone with Holden because Ford hates spending money." I would imagine with your appointment coming back into the motorsport division, that attitude has had to change because Commodore and HSV have been so successful marketing their race success, particularly in the V8 supercars.
Yes, one can only admire what Holden have managed to do. They've taken what is only a stretched oval and turned it into Australia's favourite car. So they've done a very good job with the product and, of course, with the image over a number of years. Ford did make the decision to get out of motorsport, and therefore at the time, Freddie was right, so we were not spending money. He was always a little bit burnt by the pullout back in 74. He always felt that Ford should not have made that particular decision at that time, and I can't say I argue with him. But anyway, the past is the past. We're here now. We're certainly laying a plan. We know what it will take to be competitive, and it's not just money. People tend to look at manufacturers as just supplying money. I don't want to do that. We've got a huge amount of knowledge here in Ford Australia with which we can help the technological development of the Falcon on behalf of the race teams around there. It's now a very expensive sport. The sponsors that come in, we're looking for each one of the, we, the teams are looking for each one of them to be spending literally huge sums of money, possibly more money going into our form of sport than there is, for instance, into your own rugby league. So we've got to look after the sponsors. They've got to have their moment in the sunshine. Rather than running full works teams out there, we're looking more to work behind the scenes with the teams, use the Ford technology and help them with the skill base that we've got available both within racing and within the motor industry itself, and get these teams, these Ford Falcons out there doing some winning. They need to.
This year, the Fords did start at a little bit of a disadvantage. Only one team had really run the Bridgestone tyres before in the Ford Tikva team, which formerly was Glen Seaton Racing. And then the aero kits and everything were very slow to get trickled down to all the other AU runners. Now, that was really before your appointment and before you got involved in this. I would imagine that's not going to happen in subsequent years when the models are all being changed subsequently.
Well, if it were to happen along those lines, certainly anybody and everybody would deserve to ask me to give up that job. One of the biggest surprises for the teams this year is the AU Falcon itself. The EL Falcon, the previous model that was being raced, to be honest, was a bit of a cart horse, and to get its attention, you could hit it over the head with a mallet and you get it to change direction. The AU is a much more refined vehicle, stiffer vehicle. It's a vehicle whereby it's more like a greyhound, and you have to use a fine amount of tuning, and that really, as much as anything, is what's thrown our teams, is to find out how it reacts, where that reaction is it springs, is it shock absorb, is it ride height, aerodynamic aids, and what have you, and very, very small changes are in fact completely changing the attitude of the car during the heat or during the day. So it's the fine tuning factor that they've had to learn, unfortunately, while they're running a race program. So every fortnight they're out there racing. In the middle of that, they can't do a lot of development, so it's been a huge learning curve for them. They've actually done very well. The car's starting to really show its mettle now, and what will be interesting will be the Bathurst race coming up in middle November, because I think that both Ford and Holden are going to put on a really good show this year.
I was at a press conference earlier in the year where Audi laid